This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
All right, so two pretty momentous things yesterday for entirely different reasons in the world of sports. Pretty massive progress. Carl Nassib, defensive end for the Las Vegas Raiders, announced on Instagram that he is gay. And I would say the NFL was very, very welcoming of it. I think a lot of progress over the last 5 or 6 years. Very different than when Michael Sam came out back in 2014. The other thing, and we're going to dive into both of these, but the other thing was that the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that athletes should be getting a bigger piece of the pie, basically. So these are two things that for years and years and years have been treated very, very differently than they were yesterday. In the case of Nassib, I would say by the NFL and by society, and I would say in the case of the college athletes in the NCAA, just treated very, very differently in a court of law. We'll start with Carl Nassib, Seth. Here was Carl Nassib's announcement on Instagram yesterday.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that like one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds. That's all I have for you guys. I hope you have a great day.
So, Seth, I would say that this was obviously a big deal yesterday. Just by definition, it was a huge headline. It was a huge news item. I would say the encouraging thing is that what wasn't a big deal was the debate as to how he would be accepted in an NFL locker room. Because that's what it was 7 years ago when Michael Sam came out.
Yeah, which I always felt was overblown at that time too, Sean. I think the one thing people forget is that a lot of us talking about this are in our 40s or 50s, and we think, including that Michael Irvin, because Michael Irvin, I remember Michael Irvin, we'll have to pull up what he had actually said about, you know, what would have happened if a guy had come out when he was playing. And some of it is true from what it would have been like 20, 30, 40 years ago. I think young people, especially people in their early 20s now, have just been raised in a completely different environment and have more friends that are openly gay or classmates or what have you. And it's just not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. Compared to, I think with Michael Sam, there seemed to be a bunch of hand-wringing by people who weren't the actual athletes themselves. You know, I didn't hear much from the athletes themselves. So I think kind of the matter-of-fact way in which Nassib did it was more, I think it was more evidence of perhaps society at large than the NFL. I would still worry for Nassib's sake about how coaches and GMs and some of the people who are older than in their 20s might receive him or feel about it. It's not like there's 100% unanimous acceptance or anything like that. But I think amongst players, it's just a much, much different world than when we grew up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Sean, you know, when we grew up, I mean, throwing around homophobic slurs was like, that was, that was what young boys did for the most part. It was just completely the level of acceptance of that in a locker room and what have you has just changed night and day. Especially, you're right about even since Michael Sam, a lot of that has changed.
Yeah,
within sports too.
I think. Yes, I agree with everything you just said about the players and all this. I guess what I'm talking about is the coverage of it yesterday. Like, I didn't see anywhere on TV or on ESPN.com or on social media where there was a debate as to will he be accepted in an NFL locker room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even the people that generate the conversation, I didn't really see that as a talking point at all. Whereas 7 years ago, it was a massive talking point amongst media members.
It's always been strange because I think like at various sports teams I've been on where there's maybe a guy that you think might be or the, you know you find out later that he definitely was or what have you. Like there was still never any awkward. At least I didn't feel any locker room awkwardness about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of these things where people love to have their hard and fast stances about how they wouldn't like this, they wouldn't like that. But meanwhile, like if you're listening right now, you've probably been on a team with a gay teammate at some point, mm-hmm. and you survived it just fine. You might not have even known about it. Everything worked out just A-okay.
If I've learned anything from doing shows with players like you, like Ted Johnson, for several years, it seems to me that the NFL locker rooms among players is generally a much more accepting place of people than society at large.
Well, you know what? You know what, Sean? I guess you have to separate, though. I mean, there's the way you are when you post comments online or maybe how you get up and how you would give a speech or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's, okay, how are you at the workplace? And I think most people, most people listening right now go to work somewhere where there are a bunch of people with different religious beliefs, different sexual orientations, different ideas about gender and all that. And they manage to get along just fine, you know? Now the myth of having like 53 guys who all live and breathe and feel the same way, that just doesn't exist and it never has.
Mm-hmm.
So and then when it comes to things like homosexual coworkers or what have you, I think even like the more religious 22-year-olds nowadays might have feelings about it that are contrary to whatever, but they also recognize, oh, okay, wait, I also share a locker room with adulterers. I share a locker room with people who blaspheme. I share a locker room with they might have a different version of Protestantism than I do, and I disagree with it vehemently, but mm-hmm. we all get along. So it's just, it's not as big a deal, and they put it in a different, it has a different relativity to them than the importance that previous generations used to put on it.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. The other big thing that came down yesterday that is breaking down walls of a different variety, I suppose, is that the Supreme Court ruled unanimously essentially that athletes should be getting a bigger piece of the pie. Seth, in reading up on this and what it all means, the Supreme Court voted unanimously. It's more of a ruling for largely related to basketball and football players at the FBS level that they'll get more, it's related more to academic endeavors. Like they'll be allowed to paid internships and laptops and things like that. It's not necessarily all of a sudden all these athletes are getting a salary or something like that, and it has nothing to do with the name, image, likeness stuff that's going on. But it is something, and I think it's viewed, the sense I got is that it's viewed just more symbolically as a warning shot to the NCAA that if some other stuff starts to show up in a court of law, that the castle could start coming down pretty soon on them compensating athletes much more fairly than they're being compensated right now.
Yeah, the biggest thing with the NCAA over the last, because there's still in my mind, there's still an argument for amateurism. The problem is that the NCAA has allowed itself to become so far from anything that resembles an amateur athletics association. Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes to football and basketball, I should say, especially football, where when you have coaches making millions upon millions of dollars, there's a huge disparity there. Back, it wasn't too long ago that coaches were kind of like really, you know, pretty well paid professors at an educational institution.
Yes.
Where now they are stars unto themselves. And the athletic department is almost The athletic department is almost a completely separate entity at a lot of the big time programs from the university itself. So I just there's a disparity there that just hasn't felt right. Without even getting into all the legal aspects of it, it's just wrong when you might say, hey, look, you're getting an education, you're getting paid. Okay. Well, if we're going to turn it into a free market discussion, sure. Should everybody get paid the exact same amount across the board? Are you a communist?
Right.
Like, oh, okay. If they're getting paid, then fine. The guys that actually are really bringing a lot to the table in terms of fame and prestige to the university, then they should be able to get paid a little bit more.
If you're an Alabama football player, yeah, Nick Saban making $10 million a year or whatever it is probably kind of glitchy to you, especially if you're a prominent player. But then you see him doing an Aflac commercial, you're like, okay, well, there's another couple million that he makes because that opportunity is available to him. Now, pretty soon, I think the name, image, like the walls are coming down on a lot of this stuff for the NCAA. Like the day of reckoning is coming for the NCAA.
Yeah, I guess the biggest question is, and this is, it's a legitimate concern, but just the what kind of a quagmire of regulation is there going to be now? When if you try to monitor all this stuff, I don't think that it's not going to be the death or ruination of college football, but I think that it's going to be there. This is going to bring a whole lot of entanglements with it.
Yeah, well, I think for longtime fans, it certainly feels like a little piece of your soul probably goes away just because the innocence is a little bit gone at that innocence with air quotes. I get that.
It is true. The violations are never as bad as a lot of people want you to believe. Because usually what happens is your school gets accused of something, and then you lash out by saying, well, they're flat out paying the guys at Alabama $75,000 a year.
Yeah.
Where I think in most instances it is still rogue boosters that are the biggest issue, and that for the most part, like a lot of guys, remember Arian Foster talking about how they didn't have enough money to buy tacos when they were there. That kind of a lot of places that it still is poor college kids that are just playing to try to get ahead in life.
I wonder what's going to happen with the other sports. You know what I mean? If all of a sudden teams have to start budgeting to pay football players to pay something resembling a salary, does that mean that three of the Olympic sports now go away because we got to pay the football players, and if that's what happens and that's what the market bears, then so be it. It would suck for the kids that are playing for those other teams. But that's I'm more curious about it than having any sort of emotional tie to the outcome. All right.
You know what I was really proud of for Carl Nassib yesterday?
What's that?
That he's still also openly a nerd. He came out of the nerd closet several years ago.
He
was on Hard Knocks and he gave that financial advice.
Giving really unrealistic financial advice.
It was really, it was like, hey, if you earn 10% on your money consistently every single year. Yeah.
We should find that. We should find it and play it and then warn people at the end. Don't count on these returns.
That was when he was first learning about finances. He's actually learned a lot more since then. I've seen him on a couple little news clips of other financial shows, and he's a bright guy.
Yep. Was Jadeveon Clowney disrespecting J.J. Watt when he said this? I want to get Seth's thoughts on that next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. So, Jadeveon Clowney, he is getting his Cleveland Browns career started here. And he was asked last week, he gets to play alongside Myles Garrett right now, and he was asked about playing alongside somebody as freaky as Myles Garrett, and here's what he had to say.
What's it like for you to be out there on the field with a guy that is pretty close to being your athletic equal?
It's funny. I haven't ran into many guys like that in the National Football League yet. Took me 8 years to get here to find another one like that. On defense, anyways. But it's great.
Okay, Seth. When he paused, I was like, okay. When he paused there, I'm like, okay, he's going to say except for JJ. And he pauses and he goes, well, on defense at least. I'm like, hey, JJ plays defense. What are you doing?
I can't believe he answered a question from Garrett Cole. quite like that.
He did sound like Garrett Cole.
At first, I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Is this a podcast?
Yeah.
Is this Garrett Cole's podcast?
Garrett Cole.
It's like Garrett Cole and Mike and Jadeveon Clowney take passive-aggressive shots at other Houston
just
star
chopping
athletes.
It up. Garrett
That's
Cole,
the title. It's on your Odyssey app.
Yep. Garrett Cole is the most ambitious athlete making $36 million a year. He wants to get into media as well, so he started his own podcast where he interviews former number one overall. It's the number one overall pick podcast. Garrett Cole, former number one overall pick, interviews other former number one overall pick. That's actually not a horrible idea.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah. It's you'd run out after a while, I suppose.
After a while.
Like people that are willing. Because you're only, they're either superstars or they're busts.
Right.
The busts don't want to talk about the fact that they're busts unless you're paying them, right?
Yeah,
but nobody wants to pay a podcast.
If anybody can pay
him.
If anybody can, you know who can pay him? Garrett freaking Cole. He can pay everybody.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. So, was that a shot at J.J. Watt? I'm gonna give you this.
Okay.
Every time when I saw every headline about this and I saw the quote, I thought, oh, boy, that's totally a shot at J.J. When you go and you listen to just even that exchange, not the entire conversation or anything, he was specifically talking about the athleticism.
Yeah.
You know, and there was, if J.J. were athletically the way Myles Garrett is athletically, then J.J. would have been a number one overall pick, you know? It's that J.J.'s more of, it's a combination of speed and power with J.J., that gives him kind of his unique abilities and then technique and everything else that goes along with it. Like he does have rare athleticism, but it's a little bit more of like a hybrid strength and speed. Where Clowney and Myles Garrett are cut from the same cloth when it comes to, you look at him and that kid that's a number one overall
pick.
He's
different.
Like it's a genetic freak show, you know, where they're 6'5", 6'6", like perfectly sinewy and all that stuff. And then with the testing numbers that are through the roof too. So, I think that's what he meant. I don't think it was as far as the actual football playing ability.
It was interesting because I discussed it a little bit with Cecil and Wade over the last couple of days while you were out. Wade said something interesting last week. I played that audio from the Around the NFL podcast for him where they talked about how Chandler Jones, you know, now that the J.J. Watt circus has come to town, that might be part of the reason why Chandler Jones is a little sideways with the Cardinals right now. And I can't remember if it was with Wade or with you, Seth, where we speculated, boy, could that be what happened with Clowney maybe? And it must have been with Wade because here's what Wade said, and I want to get your reaction to this, is Wade said that it's really tough to be a teammate of J.J. Watt sometimes. And this was in reaction to the Chandler Jones stuff, not the Clowney stuff. He said it's really hard to be a teammate of J.J. Watt, and it's no fault of J.J., but J.J. is just the most maniacal worker of all time, and there's this tendency for coaches, whether it's assistant coaches, head coaches, maybe even front office people, to all of a sudden hold everybody in the building to this maniacal work ethic that almost nobody else on earth has with J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
And it can create a tension sometimes.
You know, it's interesting.
Not a tension, a tension. Two words, T-E-N-S-I-N, a certain kind of tension.
It's interesting because it's a thought I had when I was, you know, before Lance Armstrong had all the doping allegations.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also, there was all these tales about Lance Armstrong's legendary work ethic and like the workouts that he would go through and his preparation that other people simply couldn't keep up with. I think sometimes that's undersold as an actual athletic gift, is to be able to actually endure his workout. I mean, we love to think like, oh, if all you do is work out as hard as JJ, then you'll be as good as JJ. It's physiologically impossible for most people to work out as hard as some guys like J.J. Watt or Michael Jordan or whoever else. So that's like an athletic gift unto itself, regardless of motivation. But I think that with Clowney especially, I can imagine scenarios. I could totally imagine scenarios where either Vrabel or Weaver or anybody else might be saying, well, look at JJ. What are you doing? Look at JJ. Hey, Clowney, what are you doing? Look at JJ. Like, how many times did he have to hear look at JJ before resentment started to sink in?
A lot.
Which that's not the appropriate response, but it's an understandable human response.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, I would submit, Seth, as you were pointing out, that It's almost impossible for anybody to work out maniacally like J.J. Watt does or did. Eventually, it became impossible for J.J. Watt to.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like, eventually, yeah. his body gave out from just how crazy, you know, flipping 1,000-pound tires 8 jillion times and box jumping and things like that. Like, eventually, his body gave out doing that.
It's hard, too, because, you know, there's always the chicken and egg part of that where, you know, J.J. might say, yeah, but if I hadn't done all that stuff, then would I have attained that greatness? Would it have been better to just try to lay off a little bit and have longer sustained success? I mean, 3 defensive MVPs is pretty damn good.
Yes.
You know, and usually with defensive linemen or offensive linemen, it's not until you get to when you're 30 when you realize, like, okay, a lot of this stuff is pretty dumb to be doing, like, in April. Like, why am I putting extra stress on my knees in April? I got to figure out a way to do this with less impact. Yeah. But by then, you know, the damage is done.
Yeah. What kind of year you think Clowney's going to have in Cleveland if he's healthy?
He'll have the best year he's had since he left Houston because this will be the first year he's not the main guy.
Right.
You know, when he was in Seattle, when he was in Tennessee, it was a hired gun. Yeah, I mean, he was really – in Seattle, he was really – for the most of the season, he was the only real viable pass rushing threat.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy to focus on him. Last year, he was injured. He was banged up some, and he was on a really, really bad defense, where this year, on paper at least, the Browns' defense could do some pretty cool things. And I think he'll rack up some stats and he'll make some big impact plays like he always has. It's just, it'll show up more statistically.
The most popular former Houston Rockets still alive in the playoffs. This blew my mind. It's a poll we put up towards the end of the show yesterday. You'll hear the results of it next. I was a little surprised by this, Seth. I put this up yesterday. As we all know, there's 4 teams left in the NBA playoffs. The Bucks, the Hawks, the Suns, and the Clippers, just how everybody had it drawn up at the beginning of the year. That's wild, man. But there is a former Rocket, and I would say a prominent former Rocket on each of these 4 teams. So Rocket fans who are rooting for 2 things, I would imagine, the Rockets to land in the top 4 in the lottery tonight. You can hear our lottery coverage tonight at 7 o'clock. Adam Spillane and I will be on the air at that time. And I would imagine that they're rooting for maybe their favorite Rocket that's still remaining in the playoffs. So the 4 Rockets in question are P.J. Tucker with the Bucks, Chris Paul with the Suns, Clint Capella with the Hawks, and then Patrick Beverley with the Clippers. So I put up a poll yesterday, and it's still open if you want to go to my Twitter timeline, at Sean T. Pendergast. We've had almost 1,200 people vote in it. And I said, for Rocket fans, which former Rocket are you most rooting for in the NBA playoffs? And I was shocked by the result. I don't know if I'm shocked by who's winning, but I'm certainly shocked by the margin. Seth, I don't know if you've looked at this, and I don't know how much I've given away by saying how shocked I am if you haven't looked at it yet, but have you looked at this poll that I put
out? I have not looked at the poll.
Okay.
I was trying to figure out why you would be shocked. So I was trying to think, who would you be most shocked by doing really well? And I don't think, even though my personal emotional favorite would be Clint Capella, I don't think Clint Capella is probably doing all that well in the poll. PJ Tucker, I don't think would have shocked you. Pat Beverley, I don't think would have shocked you necessarily because of the emotional appeal of those guys. You know, those are your classic fan favorite types. Just the blue collar, you know, just badasses that want to fight you. So I'm guessing it was Chris Paul.
Chris Paul in a landslide right now.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, 48.8% of the vote. So he's almost got a majority.
Chris Paul, I think that's a lot higher than, let's say if the Rockets this season still had Harden and Westbrook, but for some reason there were injuries or they just got rolled out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that same poll. I don't think Chris Paul would have gotten nearly as many votes as he did right now. I think a lot of this is a response to people realizing, oh, wow, so Harden and Paul couldn't get along, so we had to get rid of Chris Paul, and Harden and Morey brought in Westbrook, and then Westbrook decided to blow everything up along with Harden. So Harden and Westbrook, screw it, we should have just kept Paul all along.
So you think Chris Paul is kind of a sympathetic figure?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if all things being equal, would the Rockets be better off right now if they just had Chris Paul on the team without Harden and Westbrook. You know, I mean, that's what, if they had Chris Paul and then you're talking about maybe bringing on a bunch of young guys to help, does this sound familiar at all? Yeah. Perhaps to a similar situation? Chris Paul can be the elder guy that helps a lot of young guys come along and maybe make a push in the playoffs.
Can you, Seth, can you imagine though, to get to the point you're talking about where Chris Paul is here, but James Harden is not?
Yeah.
Would mean that there was a point in time where the front office chose Chris Paul and his, at the time, horrible contract
over
in his prime James Harden.
Which ultimately would have led to, oh no, Daryl Morey's not here anymore. Everything would have been the same.
Yeah.
It would have, except people would have been angry at Daryl Morey. Now, having said all that, no, it made perfect sense. It made perfect sense to get rid of the Chris Paul contract at the time. You know, it just, that's the way it all worked out. You're right, though, Sean. If you had tried to plan it some way for it to be, no, Chris Paul is the one left standing and Harden's off in Brooklyn or what have you, then, yeah, it would be – if people would be irate. But they didn't. They wouldn't know in that situation bad it could be.
If they had a crystal ball, then they would have looked – you know, then they would have looked at it differently. The one thing we do know could have happened functionally and people wouldn't have been like, why are you doing this? Would be if Russell Westbrook and James Harden just had decided to give it a go this year. You know, if Russ didn't demand a trade and then James didn't show up chunky and then, you know, kind of worm his way out of here 9 games into the season. Seth, if they had rolled back the team they had last year, even with all the small ball stuff, because they would have picked up Christian Wood. You know, they were able to get Christian Wood even with a Russell Westbrook sized contract on the books in John Wall, and James Harden was here when Christian Wood was here at the beginning of the year. If you took last year's Rocket team with a healthy Russ and a healthy James, health is the key to all this, but if they were healthy and you added Christian Wood to the mix and maybe even Jayshon Tate, some of these other pieces, the Rockets could be in the NBA Finals this year
that's the most frustrating part about all of it was how much of this turmoil could have been avoided somehow if now, and this is where you just don't know. You know, were Westbrook and Harden simply not on the same page? And so they're good friends, don't get me wrong, but from a basketball perspective, did they have different visions for the way things should operate and how they should work out?
Yes.
Because one of the big myths was that Daryl Morey wanted to be super small last year in the playoffs, or uber small ball. That's just the way that it worked. They had to do that as the best case scenario because Westbrook couldn't shoot at all. But they were trying to find a rangy center. If they could have found a Christian Wood before the trade deadline last year, then everything might have changed completely. That's just the way that it worked out last year. So I wish Westbrook would have maybe just given it a chance with Christian Wood this year. It might have been a whole different scenario.
That would have been the big thing, because I don't know. Look, if they get a stretch five last year, but they still get knocked out in the second round, my guess is Russ still wants out. From what I had heard, Russ was taking a look around at the way things were run with James Harden kind of being the guy running things behind the scenes as a player. Yeah. He was looking around before the All-Star break last year going, okay, this ain't what I signed up for. You know what I mean? Like James Harden and Russell Westbrook have very different worldviews on what hard work looks like behind the scenes. You know, not that James Harden isn't a hard worker, but there's different ways to go about your business when it comes to being an elite player. And I think I just don't think Russ was vibing with what was going on over there. If he had, then they would absolutely, if they were healthy and had that group together, be a contender. I think, Seth? I think the Lakers' dominance in the bubble last year probably was still scaring guys into feeling like, oh, I need a different situation. I got to get out of here. James probably looked at the version of the Lakers that tore through them and the playoffs last year and said, well, I'm not winning anything here in Houston. I think even if James had just stayed here with John Wall as his running mate and Christian Wood and some of these other guys, that they might have been able to compete in the Western Conference. You know what I mean? Like it's a crazy. I'll repeat it. The final four teams standing are the Suns, the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, and the Hawks and the Bucks right now. Like it's a crazy, crazy year.
It's a crazy year, and so far through the first round of the playoffs, the ratings were way up. I mean, compared to the bubble, but I don't count that. But compared to 2019, the ratings were up, and I believe it sustained that so far. But I think one of the theories for that is that people are just kind of tired of, okay, for 10 straight years, it's been LeBron James in either Miami or Cleveland or L.A., and then it's been Golden State, and it's just gotten kind of old and annoying. And that some of the fresh blood and some of the new faces and the new storylines they're invigorating in a lot of ways. Yeah. I'm finding myself – Sean, do you know how nice it is to sit through an entire playoffs and not have to hear a damn thing about, you know, whether Jordan is better than LeBron, because Jordan never lost in the finals, but yeah. LeBron did, and boy, what a loser. And boy, I don't know, LeBron never fought any of his teammates. Doesn't he care enough? I don't have to hear any of that. It's been a decade of the same damn arguments every single time. For a little while, it turned into, can a jump shooting team win an NBA championship? And then Golden State did and changed basketball. It's been so all of those played out storylines are just completely flushed down the toilet, and it's been kind of refreshing.
It's been kind of cool, and I think when you're looking at young stars that are kind of rising up, like Trae Young and Devin Booker had both been guys that had scored a ton of points on some really bad teams.
Yeah.
And now they're both scoring a ton of points in really meaningful games, and they're both and it's not just scoring. I mean, Devin Booker had a triple-double without Chris Paul the other night. Trae Young has been, I say, a revelation. He's been an all-star caliber player, but a revelation in terms of making winning plays at the end of basketball games.
How nice is it to have Ben Simmons to hate on?
Yes!
Like it's a whole new guy. He's like the guard version of Dwight Howard now, where you can hate on this guy for his free throw shooting and what have you. Although I'll say Dwight Howard showed up in the playoffs, unlike Ben Simmons.
If he had an open dunk, he would take it.
But in terms of hating on a guy, I guess nationally though, I feel like Ben Simmons is ready to take that step forward and be the guy that's universally hated on. Except not nearly as good a basketball player as Dwight Howard.
The odds makers have it as a heavy favorite that Ben Simmons will not be back with the Sixers next year. That this playoff was enough for them to move on from Ben Simmons altogether. They have, will he be back with the Sixers to start next season? No is -300, 1-3.
They probably could have gotten a pretty good price for him, you know, at one point this year.
His stock is way down.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people still think, you know, in the right circumstances where he can be distributor and everything, then everything will be all right. If they're a better shooting team, but I don't know. His stock's got to be down.
Portland is the favorite to land him, and there's a lot of talk of Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum, that kind of thing. So we'll see. Ben Simmons next to Damian Lillard. The Philly game the other night, them losing a game 7 at home. I told Cecil this yesterday, Seth. Whenever a team either wins a championship or loses in some sort of catastrophic fashion. One of the things that Amy and I have been able to bond over through the years, maybe you and Brandy should try this for your anniversary tonight. You know, find a sporting event where something really either exhilarating or really sad happens, is we open up the police scanner app and listen to what is going on. You know, like Philly was a must-listen police scanner night on Sunday night because the fans were irate over them losing a game 7 at home.
Do you think there's more destruction after a tough loss or after a huge victory?
Here's my guess. I think there's more destruction after a huge victory. Mm-hmm. I think sports talk radio is better after a huge loss.
Right.
You know?
Especially in some of those northeastern cities.
People
are so angry. Like, they're angry all the time.
Right. Yes, Seth, the Northeast, they are angry all the time. Yeah,
they're angry all the time. They wake up angry. Mm-hmm. Then they drive in traffic for an hour. Talking about the city dwellers here. And then when their sports team loses in a game 7, that's when they just flip the switch. Basically, like, Larry and Stafford is considered relatively soft-spoken by Philadelphia.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And and he speaks a much better version of English than most Philadelphia. Like, the actual elocution and whatnot, you know, pronouncing his R's, all that stuff.
No question.
Larry does a much better job than that of most people in Philly. But the anger level, the outrage is just off the charts.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Hey, let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, this headline's getting old. Astros win again. Actually, it's not getting old. That's beautiful, beautiful, sweet music.
Tired of all the winning, Sean.
I know. 17 out of the last 21, Seth. They're 17-4 in their last 21 games. They go into Baltimore last night, and they do the Orioles. The story of this game, Yordan Alvarez, a three-run home run. The pitching staff took a no-hitter into the eighth inning. There were two rain delays with this game. The game got started an hour late because of rain. And then, God, the umpires were doing their best to try to play through a monsoon. But eventually, when the infield turned into a lake, they had to shut the game down in the eighth inning. They did come back and finish the game. 10-2, the final score. Jake Odorizzi, this is, I mean, as if the Astros needed any more good news in the starting rotation. Jake Odorizzi looked really good. Here's Dusty Baker on his performance.
His velocity's good. You know, he's up to 94, you know, pretty consistently there. His split finger is a whole lot better than it was before. His breaking ball's better. So, you know, he's finding his groove. I mean, he was behind. And he was behind when he got here. Then he got hurt, and that put him even further behind. So we're trying to, you know, catch him up to get the quality guy that we signed.
His splitter and his ability to throw it more frequently is big for Odorizzi, and we hadn't really seen that yet. But he does a really good job of making it look like his four seam and really screwing with batters. So it's been nice to see the version of Odorizzi that you hoped you were going to get. And then it was also nice to see him get pulled in the middle of a no-hitter. I'll be the first to stand up and say, "You go, Dusty." Mm-hmm. I was half nervous that Dusty was going to say, "Well, he's thrown a no-hitter, and I know we've got him on a strict pitch count." But, you know, old-school baseball, got to throw the no-hitter. I don't think Odorizzi wasn't upset either. Odorizzi knows he's got to be careful here.
No, he's got – right. For all the reasons Dusty just outlined, he's got to be really careful. And I want to say he was around 85 or 90 pitches when he pulled him after five innings.
Yep.
So I think even that, like Dusty, look at you go. If he was at 60 pitches, and maybe you keep going with it to see how far he can go and can you carry this. But you look at it, 90 pitches or whatever it was in five innings, he ain't going the distance anyways. You know what I mean? So
they stuck to the pitch count.
They did, and it was
good.
You're
right. Yeah, to get a no hitter, he was going to be so far. So I'm giving Dusty an attaboy for something that any major league manager would have done. But, Sean, you got to, you know, affirm the positive. You have the old, like, what is it, four positives to every one critique or whatever the ratio
sure,
is?
Sure, sure.
There you go.
If you say so. Javier was really good coming in relief. Seth, I think the story of this team right now, I mean, it's a cliche in sports, but next man up. That's been the, you know, with the Bregman's out. Oh, cool. Abraham Toro comes in, and Abraham Toro's doing a nice job offensively and defensively. He had a great defensive play last night. He threw a dart all the way across the diamond last night, Toro, and you know you're getting contributions still from Chaz McCormick and for Kyle Tucker. It's been nice.
And somebody that helps you, or one thing that helps you in that ability to say next man up, is this comfort level of having Yordan in left field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in specific situations with short fields, when Framber's pitching, all of these, but still, it gives Brantley a little bit of a layoff because he can play DH. All of that feels really good. I'm trying really hard not to overthink any of this. I'm not thinking about the fact that Bregman's going to come back healthy and that Kyle Tucker's going to be healthy in the second half of the season. I'm not getting ahead of myself, Sean. I'm not thinking about the fact that, hey, looks like it is all these other bastard teams start laying off the sticky substances. The best offense in baseball during the Spider-Tack era is going to obliterate records in the post-Spider-Tack era. Yeah, go screw yourself. All of Major League Baseball except the Astros.
They score, Seth, they're scoring 8 to 10 runs regularly right now, and yet it still feels like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, just telling you what it feels like, it still feels like they leave two guys on base every inning. You know what I mean? Like, they're scoring all these runs, and it feels like they're still leaving meat on the bone. They're a machine right now.
That's what happens when you have that many people on the bases all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to have more guys left on base.
USA Today.
That's my positive spin on that.
I like that. We make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money. USA Today is my new favorite publication, Seth. You know why? Because their MLB power rankings have the Astros number one in baseball right now. That's why.
Good job, USA Today.
Yep.
Always with the hard hitting news and the fact finding analysis.
Indeed.
The Astros are 29th in the league in a bad way when it comes to runners left on base.
Okay, well, you know, when you put a lot of runners on base, like you said, you leave a lot. Michael Brantley,
the
by
Dodgers
the way.
Dodgers are dead last. So, yeah, I think that bears that out.
You know, it's, yeah. Michael Brantley, 350 he's hitting right now. I wish Michael Brantley had not missed so many games. My guess is, I don't know, man, 350? When you're hitting three, I don't care if you've missed a bunch of games. You're hitting 350 in a year where the league is hitting 235 or whatever it is. Screw that. If he missed a bunch of games, you know what? Michael Brantley, all-star guy on the text page, I'm with you. Let's send Brantley to the all-star game.
Brantley gets a couple things. One is that he's, for the most part, released from a lot of the scorn over the cheating. Other than, I mean, there's going to be the casuals that just that boo any Astro whatsoever. But, you know, Brantley was an underrated guy before he got to Houston, and I think he has a respect around baseball, and yet he just doesn't have the bling of some of these other players. He just needs to get into the top three, Sean, somehow into the top three. And I think he's maybe enough, like, hardcore baseball fans out there that really appreciate Michael Brantley can put him over the top.
I do think these 2 years and change he spent with the Astros has upped his profile. You know, he's just played.
Yeah.
He's played in a lot more important games than he ever did in Cleveland over the last couple of years. So, I'm rooting for Michael Brantley. I think the Astros are going to get a handful of guys to the All-Star game. But, man, Michael Brantley hitting 350 in the middle of that lineup is
that's
something
where
else.
Brantley's the guy that you can tell, Sean, why most people just don't really actually think all that much about the cheating scandal, because a lot of them they're simultaneously convinced that Altuve was wearing a buzzer in 2019, and yet they'll also let Brantley off the hook because he wasn't there in 2017. So
right.
Like, there's some kind of if they really sat down and thought about it, they would admit, okay, yeah, they weren't cheating in 2019. 75 people interviewed didn't decide to tell the truth about the year they won the World Series, but then lie about the 2019 World Series loss. Okay.
Right. Next headline, pretty momentous day in the NFL yesterday. Carl Nassib, defensive lineman for the Las Vegas Raiders, became the first active openly gay player when he made this announcement on his Instagram feed.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds. That's all I have for you guys. I hope you have a great day.
A lot of positive reaction around football, Seth, including Roger Goodell tweeting about it, the NFL putting out a statement, the Raiders putting out a statement, several players, current and former, and athletes from around other sports, Billie Jean King, others weighing in yesterday. I have to say, you know, pretty big day. Pretty big day.
I think the atmosphere has changed a lot over the past 10 or 20 years. In society at large, obviously. I don't think NFL locker rooms have been really all that much different probably than most workplaces compared to, and I think the thing that's probably changed the most is just the fact that now these are 25-year-old, 30-year-old kids that grew up in a different environment. Mm-hmm. You know, yesterday I was just scrolling through my timeline and JJ popped up. JJ Watt said, "Good for you, Carl. Glad you feel comfortable enough to share. Hopefully someday these types of announcements will no longer be considered breaking news." I don't, you know, and I'm not just isolating JJ. That just happened to pop up on my phone just
sure.
Now. And I've seen a lot of sentiments from a lot of athletes. I think maybe 10 years ago, there wouldn't have been outright criticism by it, but I don't think necessarily as many high-profile athletes would have just gone out and supported it as much. It's just a different level of understanding and acceptance that young adults have now compared to when we grew up.
Yeah.
Which is which is good because, I mean, it's all – look, I played with Asera Tuaolo, who came out of the closet after he was done playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy – I guess there were rumors about him when I played. I was oblivious to it. But I can remember – he had a brother who had died of AIDS, and, you know, and his brother was gay. And I can remember at times – hearing stuff in the locker room where guys would just be talking, and I'd be like, ah, crap. And I kind of thought of Asera, like, hearing some of that stuff where guys used to toss slurs around a lot more commonly. And that was my first kind of, awakening of, like, holy crap, this is, like, that.
When, like Seth, that, when was that?
That was in 1997.
Okay, so your rookie year with the Jags.
Yeah, no. And so then he came out of the closet after he had retired,
mm-hmm.
and I reflected on even further, and I thought about, damn, I put myself in Asera's shoes growing up all those years of hearing guys just throwing around slurs left and right and acting the way, you know, the way kids acted when we grew up. And I just don't think it's as much like that anymore. I'm not saying, like, hey, the world's a perfect place or anything, but it's just not, there's not as much of that undue hostility or demonization the way there was. It's much, much, much more common.
Yeah, and I don't think, and I didn't see any of this yesterday, but I saw, Seth, no speculation as to, wow, is it going to be a circus at the Raiders camp because of Carl Nassib, the way it was with Michael Sam 7 years ago. No, through no fault of Michael Sam's, but that was a much bigger talking point 7 years ago is, boy, what's that? What's the atmosphere going to be like in camp? He got drafted by the Rams, I think, that year.
Carl Nassib, after a little while, is going to be like, all right, we need some more guys to come out of the closet because these interview requests are getting to be a pain in the ass.
Right.
Please, just somebody. Yeah. He's going to have to start. He's going to have so many damn interview requests, and it's all going to be about the same thing,
mm-hmm.
That at some point it might start to wear on him. So, yeah, he needs he's he should say, I'm coming out today in the hopes that more of you will because in the last 15 seconds, I've already received 4,000 interview requests.
Only got 24 hours in a day. Yes, absolutely. All right, next headline as we roll on here on Payne and Pendergast on a Tuesday. Seth, Eli Manning is getting a role with the Giants. He's a Giant legend. He's going into their Ring of Honor. Won two Super Bowls there, obviously. MVP of two Super Bowls. Eli Manning, one of the just the craziest factoids in sports history. Eli Manning, the decidedly average to below average regular season quarterback, is a two-time Super Bowl MVP. Adam Schefter reporting yesterday, Seth, Eli Manning is rejoining the Giants organization with his responsibilities now including business operations and fan engagement initiatives. Manning will also be inducted into the Giants Ring of Honor on September 26th when they play the Falcons. I don't have a ton of thoughts on this one. We're not in New York. We're in Houston. Other than to say that if Eli Manning is giving a TED Talk or a presentation on business ops, I'm taking a vacation day and going to that presentation.
This would be
the greatest presentation of all time.
If Eli Manning weren't a fringe Hall of Fame candidate football player, like, and if all I knew of him was just what I had seen of him from a distance or what have you had no idea he was a football player and he got this job, I'd be like, oh my gosh. Boy, talk about privilege. This guy's just Archie Manning's kid. He looks every bit like some kid from the rich kid frat on campus.
Yep.
That got the job because of connections, but obviously he's different.
Yep.
I think this will entail a whole lot of him going to luncheons.
Yes.
And getting up and giving a few comments, mm-hmm. and speeches and going around on game day and talking to the suite holders and all that stuff.
Sitting down and scratching out his John Hancock there on a few glossies and things like that.
Either that or he's going to take it super serious and he's going to get graphs and charts and everything.
That would be awesome too. Would be great. He's going through his slideshow and all of a sudden like a slide of Cookie Monster pops up or something like, oops, sorry about that.
I think the business operations side of that, I would guess, it would make the most sense. The most bang for the buck you're going to get out of Eli is when Eli Manning shows up in a room full of Giants fans and prospective season ticket holders.
Yes.
They're going to lose their minds.
That's right. Yeah. Those are the business operations. Last headline. The Luann platter will live on, it would seem. What is the Luann platter? Well, if you go to Luby's, you know the Luann platter is one of the items on their menu. And the cafeteria chain Luby's. If you drive around Houston, there are a handful of Luby's that are closed. You know, they're just, and you drive by, and it's a relic of a Luby, of a day gone by when Luby's existed here.
There's no line at Luby's. There, that's what you say, but in a sad way.
In a sad way, there's no line. There's no people. However, it looks like the people are coming back. Seth Luby's is basically getting restaurant CPR. The cafeteria chain, beloved by Texans, announced that a company has agreed to buy 32 Luby's locations here in the state of Texas and the Luby's cafeteria brand for $28.7 million. Is $28.7 million
sitting out there? You could have owned a Luby's for a bunch of Luby's?
32
for
of them. 32 and the brand for $28.7 million. That feels like a bargain.
This is not as notable as one little detail that you omitted. And I'm curious about why you omitted this detail.
Which is what? What is that?
Where is this group that's buying the chain come from?
They are Chicago-based.
Ah! Yeah. Where's the people? Where are the people who now own Whataburger?
Chicago-based.
Chicago. This, I will not stand. A coincidence that this comes just a few days after the Astros own the White Sox?
A hostile takeover.
I think this is a volley back at Houston, because they can't beat us on the baseball, on the diamond, then this is what they're trying to come after our Luby's, which apparently we don't care all that much about.
Where do you come out?
As Whataburger.
Look, now here's the thing. No, it's not. Not even close.
Whataburger is the best Chicago-based establishment I've ever been to. I don't care for deep dish pizza all that much, but I'll take a Chicago Whataburger any day of the week.
What about, you know how many people you're angering by calling it a Chicago Whataburger?
By saying that they're owned by Chicago?
By reminding people they're owned by Chicago.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry. 2 + 2 = 4. The sky is blue sometimes. And Whataburger is owned by Chicagoans.
Yep. You're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, an Odyssey station. Where do you come out on the cafeteria genre? I'm happy for the Luby's people, Seth, the employees that are getting their jobs back and so forth. I'm not a big fan of the cafeteria.
I'm going to be a hypocrite here, because I'm going to say I have very fond feelings for cafeterias, because in my dad's small town of Harmony, North Carolina, back in the day when I was growing up, it was just a little town out in the sticks back then, and one of the only eating establishments in the place was the cafeteria, which I don't know, maybe there were more, but that was the only one we could afford. So that was eating out for me. That was fine dining, and I loved going, and you could get your own little Jello, and you pick, you know, all this a la carte dining. I loved it. And yet, as much as I love it, I haven't been to one since my senior year in high school. So like at the school cafeteria. So I as much as I have fond memories of the cafeteria, you know, picking on nerds at the high school cafeteria, eating with my dad at the Harmony cafeteria.
Fond
making
memories.
Fun of the lunch lady, all that stuff. Yeah.
Fond memories picking on nerds in the cafeteria.
I never picked on nerds.
I know. It's funny. It's funny though. Amy,
I had an open table policy at my cafeteria.
Anybody was allowed to sit down at Seth Payne's table.
Because I was the only one sitting there, so yeah.
Didn't have much of a choice.
I would look longingly as people walked by.
Hey guys,
you want to sit with me today?
Hey guys, I have an open table policy.
I'm Seth. Remember from kindergarten in the next 7 grades too. Please sit with me now.
713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Yeah. So welcome back, Luby's. 32 of them around Texas.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.